Big Burn 18 Wheeler in the building. Drive Time Radio Show on WGXC 90.7 FM. In the studio with us right now, and Bill, I want to get this right, man. I've been practicing. You are the fourth board supervisor currently, and you are also the minority. The leader. Yeah, you know what? I wrote it, and yeah, just come up a little closer, Bill, so I can make
all
sure.
Right, yeah.
Go ahead. Mic check, go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, so listen, but I did call you the majority leader. I mean, by accident.
I was hoping. I was like, look, that's a step up.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah. So Lynn sends me an email. She says, Vern, you know, Bill's the majority leader. I was like, oh, yeah, my bad. All right. Let me go fix it. But first of all, I want to thank you for coming in with us. Let me give you the
no
clap.
Problem.
You know what I'm saying? I know it was last minute. Lynn reached out to you. So I want to thank you for actually coming in and sitting with us. So
yeah,
let me give you the clap. The number here, 518-828-0290. You guys can call up. We're going to have a little conversation here. So, Bill, we know of each other, but we have a long history. Like, I grew up underneath of you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
And I've watched you, and I watched Jake Jr., and you know what I'm saying? So, I can't say, like, I know Bill to the point where I could tell you his favorite food,
mm-hmm.
but we know of each other. And if you know me, then there's an elephant in the room. I want to get it out the room right now and get
I was,
it. Yeah.
I was expecting this.
Yeah,
so,
but I'm, you know, and me and you have conversations before. Yeah, I just want to get it out the room so that, and I just want to tell you that I'm going to say something to you, and it's not going to impact this interview. This interview is going to be presented fairly. This interview is going to be by the book. So
okay.
No matter what way, but I want to get this out and get it done with. You know what I'm saying?
All right.
So listen, and I'm not going into too much details because it's not about that.
Do I get to respond?
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Bill, I ain't gonna set you up, man. Come on, I ain't gonna do you like that. So listen, so maybe last week or whatever, there was a post,
yep.
and the post was about a member of my family,
yeah,
and which has nothing to do with me, but also my mother was brought up.
Yep.
And it wasn't brought up in a negative way. It wasn't brought up in a negative way.
I'm glad
but
you said that.
Yep. No, listen. Like I said, I'm not going to set you up. And you know me well enough
yep.
to know this is not what this is about. And it wasn't brought up in a negative way. But I personally felt like it shouldn't have been brought up.
Okay.
So I want to give you a chance to speak on it. Not going into any details.
Yep.
But I want to say, hey, man, do you want to take that back? Or do you want to carry on and say, I did it and that's it? And then we move on. But like I said, and I promise, and this is my word to everything, your answer will not determine how this interview turns out. You are going to be treated fairly no matter what. I just want you to know that. But I'm giving you that opportunity so you could be heard on that.
So, first, let me go back and say, Vern, and you know me, I have the utmost respect for your mom
mm-hmm.
and every other adult that really attend our church. So, I certainly didn't mean to denigrate her, was certainly not trying to talk about her negatively in any way. In fact, when I you know, sent the post out, you know, I looked at it. I was like, I thought it was a positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? I didn't see it as a negative. But if it offended Miss Tony, I certainly apologize to her, you know, but it wasn't meant in that fashion.
Okay. Yo, listen, man, you know what? That's big right there. And like I told you, I didn't think it was done negatively. Like,
it wasn't malicious.
But no. I just thought that, you know, how some things... You know, if this is my cousin, if me and her going mm-hmm. at it, and you know, I'm like, your cousin, you know, don't bring my son into it.
Mm-hmm. Right,
you know,
right,
call
right.
me the name you want to call me,
yeah.
but you can't bring my son into it. And I mean, and then that's all I'm saying. And I purposely did it this way because I wanted you to understand that it ain't about anything else.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? It's not mm-hmm. about anything else. So I want to do this. And a lot of people don't receive a lot of claps on here, but when they earn them, I give them. And I'm going to give you a clap. And if you were to answer the other way, I would have gave you a clap anyway. Know why? For one, for you showing up. Two, for you knowing me well enough to know that I wanted to get that elephant out the room
yeah.
so we could carry on. So let
I'm
me not. Yeah, let me give you the clap. And cuz, don't talk to the crowd. Let this man enjoy his clap, all right? All right, so let's get down to business. So,
yes,
Bill, do me a favor and explain to the listeners. And oh, here's one more thing. What I want to do is I want to do a format where I ask you some questions.
Okay.
You answer them, but we kind of answer them in a timely fashion. But I promise, if you need 7 minutes, I'll give you the last 7 minutes or the last 5 minutes to talk uninterrupted so that you can do your pitch and so that people know, because people still can go to the polls in November.
Yep.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
So let me ask you some questions and, you know, we answer them. And then I'll give you your time to pitch. If that's okay with you.
That's good.
And I'm going to do the same exact thing for Linda and the same thing I'm going to tell her. We're going to try to keep the answers short.
Yep.
For the questions that I have. I don't have a ton, but I have enough. So just let people know exactly how long you've been in politics and just what you actually do.
So I was alderman for 4 years, and this is my temp year as a supervisor. 4 years as majority leader.
Okay. And what got you into politics? What gave you that itch?
I actually fell into politics accidentally. I was asked to run by Dan Grandinetti, and I wasn't interested. But when, they came to me and started talking about employment and things of that nature, you know how things work at the county, I thought long and hard about it, and I ran. And then once I got there, though, I realized that I can actually do some things in the community, because I knew I had no clue what alderman did.
Okay.
So once I got there, and of course I ran into your brother, who was pretty tough. That's basically I got there when I realized I could do things in the community.
And you just felt like this was something that you wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically.
I got to tell you, like I said, we know of each other and know each other enough. Mm-hmm. Growing up, like, I knew you DJ, and then that was one of the things I always looked up.
Most people don't believe me, though.
Yeah, you DJ with Jake and them. You guys used to throw the best parties and had all the cool stuff. But, I mean, if I look back from the time I came back to Hudson, all I've known you done is politics. You know what I'm saying? You've been in politics for, 14 years now, right?
Yeah.
10 and 4. So, I mean, that's a good run.
Yeah.
that's a pretty good run.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to ask a question about the primary. And if any question that I ask you, if you don't want to answer it, you just say,
no, I'm good.
About the primary. Now, one of the things that I want to say that took me by surprise was the ward reconstruction. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And how much did that play in a part in because you said this is, what, your 10th year as a supervisor, right?
Yeah.
So for 9 years... Well, 10 years, you were in the 4th Ward, right?
Correct.
And the 4th Ward consisted of the Fireman's Home and also
Crosswinds
and all that.
Right.
Now, the Fireman's Home and the Crosswinds are in the 5th Ward now.
No. On the Fireman's Home is still in the 4th.
It's still in the 4th?
Crosswinds is in
the 5th.
But I now have Robinson Street, Mill Street, some of Washington, once the right side of Washington, all of Prospect, and a portion of 5th. State, 5th and State, which were all in the 5th previously.
So did that play a part in anything that went on during the primary?
I would say yes, only in the fact that it was people who didn't know me. Mm-hmm. And so as I tried to get out and know them, obviously the demographic is a little different there.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of them were receptive initially, and some of them weren't receptive simply for what maybe they had heard about me, or whatever their personal views were. I mean, I had a couple of people where I went to their house, they shooed me off their porch before they had even met me. So I was like, okay, let me chalk them up to not being supporters. Mm-hmm. But they hadn't met me, nor had they ever talked to me. So, but that's okay. People are entitled to their opinions.
I want to ask you this also as a competitor. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, as a competitor, this primary race between you guys, you and Linda, was probably the biggest thing that anybody's talking about.
Right.
I mean, the race with Steve and Tom, I mean, it started out like big, but it really didn't last to be that. As a competitor, in the last 10 years, how many times have you had a candidate that you ran up against? Because I'm guessing, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing that you probably ran unopposed quite a few times.
Twice.
You ran unopposed 2 times?
I had candidates run against me twice.
Is this the second time or?
No, this would be the third.
Third, okay.
Yeah.
So did you take a different approach going into that? Or did you just say, I've done these things
in
the community.
Well, I've never been primary.
Oh, okay. This is your first primary?
This is my first primary.
Okay.
Well, first primary as a supervisor.
I was alderman, right?
I was primary as alderman.
Okay. All right. So, one thing I want to do is I want to take a second, and anybody that knows, and if they have a conversation about you, there's certain things people can't take away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't take away the accolades that you actually did, were able to do. So I want to give you a clap for that, because I read the stuff that you sent out And you have had your hands involved in a lot of things in our community and in our county. So, like I said, if you deserve a clap, I'm going to give you a clap. And that's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to give you the clap. Hold tight. But I want to pick a couple of them that I read through. Like I said, I have some questions. I want to pick a couple of them, and you just talk to me about them.
Okay.
And talk to the listeners and tell them exactly what they are and you know, the input that you had. The ethics policy.
Yep.
Talk about that. And
So the ethics policy, when I joined the board, actually, that was one of the main reasons why I ran for supervisor, because if people don't know, I left the board of supervisors under a cloud. I was discriminated against. I actually played my own lawyer and won the case. Right. But given that you can't sue government, you know, they basically had to make me whole and was ordered to leave me alone. So as I stayed in my job, I kind of was forced out. And when I was forced out, I decided that I was going to run for supervisor. Excuse me, I have a little cold. Mm-hmm. I was going to run for supervisor and make a difference. And so when I did, one of the first things I did, as soon as I walked in the door, I said, I want to see you guys' ethics policy. And right away, you know, I got a whole lot of pushback from the chairman and other supervisors. And I didn't understand why I got so much pushback, because the ethics policy should be readily available for everybody.
Yeah, correct.
So they gave me the policy, but I said, well, I want to see the list of members. They said, well, it's going to take us a couple of weeks to get that together. For what? You should have the list right there. And the reason why is when I received a list, two of the members on the list had already deceased.
Oh.
So that tells me that the policy hadn't been in effect for a very long time. So I went in. The lawyer at the time was Dan Tozinski, and they had a young upstart, Brent Stack. And I said, I want to rewrite this policy. So I sat down and I started pulling inserts from the state's ethics policy and some other ethics policies throughout other counties. And I started, you know, rewriting Columbia County's policy. And in there, I put the employee's bill of rights to protect employees from going through the same things that I went through.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's great right there. And how long ago was that?
That was in 2008.
So, I mean, before you got there, obviously it was in shambles. I mean, people were on there that weren't even alive.
Mm-hmm.
Since you rewrote it, has there been anybody that violated these codes or any?
So we've had, well, one of the other things in the policy I made sure was that the board is bipartisan, because as you know, when a complaint comes to the board, they get to decide whether they want to send it to the DA for investigation or not. The ethics policy, I mean, the ethics board doesn't get to levy, you know, really punishment if it rises to the level of crime. It has to go to the DA.
To the DA, all right.
So one of the things I did have included in there as well is that whenever members are picked, there's four members, there's going to be two Democrats, two Republicans to make sure it's fair and equal, along with the county attorney. And yes, there has been quite a few cases, a couple of serious cases. We just aren't privy to those cases because they are sent to the DA.
Oh, okay.
We get notified that there was a case, and that's all we're told.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I'm going to jump off of this question. I just got a question that came through my phone. And one of the questions was, how do you feel about the new blood of politicians that's coming in to Hudson, you know, in this race right here. We had a couple guys that came in and
I'm
stuff
pretty
like
excited,
that.
I'm excited, actually.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about Kamal. I always thought the brother was a young upstart, whether it was politics or just something in the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was working with the Primus neighborhood. But if anybody knows, you know me, know that that's near and dear. And I'm going to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
That's near and dear to me. I think he has a bright future, whether it's politics or not. Politics is a rough game. I think maybe, you know, he might want to switch over and you know, stay in that realm, but probably work the outer edges. You know what I'm saying? Maybe upper staff levels and things of that nature. But he, you know, he has a lot to offer, not just the black community, and people need to realize that he has a lot to offer to our youth, period.
Yeah. I think since you brought him up, I'm going to say that not only our youth, but to our community at whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he understands that it's no longer about just black. I mean, I think he's bought in to what's best for the people of Hudson. He lives in a ward that's probably 2% of black or people of color. And I just was wondering, especially with someone like him, and someone like yourself who's been in politics for so long, when you heard that he was running, and I know you know him personally, but when you heard that he's running, did you say, you know, it's going to be hard, little guy, you know? Or did you say, no, I believe in you, I know you could do it?
No, I initially said it was going to be hard only because of the ward he was in, the makeup, not because of hard for him because of his abilities. And I actually, this job is going to be fairly easy for him, you know, because he gets it. He knows the needs of the people. He sees what's out there. But the unfortunate part is where you live to initially get to the stage of where you can start to put your opinions forward, you had to get elected by the people. And he happened to live in a ward that the majority of the people don't look like him.
Correct,
To his credit, I had to give it to him. To his credit, he was able to get elected. So big kudos to him, and they have a great alderman on their hands. So
Let's go talk about the St. Charles. I read in one of your things that you had a lot to do with the St. Charles and that. You want to talk about that?
So the St. Charles, that's a real interesting one. So I was called into a meeting. It was like 3:45. I'm going to use that as an example. At 3:45, and told at 3:50, we're going to sign this contract to make St. Charles a homeless shelter. And I said, say what? And, you know, I used some explicit language. And Betty Young, who at the time, if you know me, bro, I try not to, like, disrespect any. So I always called her Mrs. Young. And she would always tell me to call Betty. And I said that, well, that's never going to happen. But she and I got in a pretty heated argument because she was in full favor of the plan that Art Bear was the chairman at the time had put forth. And I said, listen, I don't care what any of y'all said. We're not going to have a homeless shelter. And at the time, that's what we called it, homeless shelter. We don't call them that anymore, but that's what we called it at the time. Homeless shelter in a historic hotel in the middle of our business district. It's not going to happen. And I said, we will pull out all the strings. And so we did. We got people to rally. We, you know, we started phone calling. I called the mayor, who was Mayor Scalera at the time. I mean, we went berserk. And, you know, by 4 o'clock, they pulled it. So.
Okay. And that was around when? I remember.
2000 and I'm going to say 11, 12.
Oh, okay. So my question is, if I had to vote on that, I agree with you. It will be tough to have a homeless shelter in the middle of the business district. But what has happened since? I mean, if the St. Charles was the place and then they said, nope, you can't have it here, where did we move and have we have a plan to have a homeless shelter somewhere else?
So we now have a plan for supportive housing. We had a plan for supportive housing, which I was the lead of, over on 6th and State. You know, I'm going to take a little bit of blame for that. I guess I didn't get out enough to the public and articulate to the public what it was we were doing there. But we had a plan. I thought it was a very good plan that we were going to do there. It was a partnership between Galvin and also the Mental Health Association. And it was going to be supportive housing with wraparound services. And it was going to house about 25 people. And that got shot down by the people in Hudson.
Is that what they call the homeless shelter now, supportive housing?
Supportive housing.
Okay, okay. Right. Yeah.
And so we moved on, and now this year we have a very good plan. We're in phase one. I can't, you know, I made promises that I, you know, to people in contracts. We got RFPs that still have to go out, but we're in phase one of a project now. And by wintertime, we should be able to have a lot more to say about that.
Because I'm just thinking, like I said, it was great not to have it here. And the St. Charles is flourishing now. They're doing great. But at the same time, this issue is still a part of our community. Like, these homeless people still need a place to go.
Yep.
So I was wondering if there was anything in plan, like on the top of the on the top of the ladder.
And not only do they need a place to go, they need a quality place to go where they can, you know, we can uplift them and give them a second chance at life. So that's the goal.
I agree. Let's talk about the Empire Zone, and that's with Chamber, right?
Yes. No, the Empire Zone was it was started by Governor Patterson.
Okay.
So Governor Patterson started the Empire Zone, and what they did is they came down into the community and they created zones. You had what they called the 1199 Economic Development Zone, and that basically encompassed the second and fourth wards.
Okay.
They also added Greenport and Clarvick, which really had nothing to do with the zone. But in order to for us to pull in the monies, you had to have, you know, the poor people. You had to have the people with the, you know, low economic standards. And for people who don't know this, when we apply for CDBG grants, when we apply for, you know, a lot of these grants outside, out in the state or within federal government, a lot of times they use the fact that we have this concentrated poverty within the second and fourth wards to apply for these grants because it looks good on an application.
Okay.
But more often the funds aren't applied to you. And that's what I always fought against.
So I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. Go back and say it again, because I heard you. I just want to make sure that everybody else heard you.
A lot of times when we apply for CDBG grants and a lot of other grants, we use the statistics from the 1199 Empire Zone. You know, the fact that it's a impoverished community, it has a high concentration of low-income people, dilapidated housing. And that looks good on an application when you're applying for certain grants. Not all grants, but when you're applying for certain grants, that looks good on an application. And a lot of times we're able to win. I mean, the AmeriCorps grant was based, part on that, although it's benefiting the people downtown.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But you have and I was part of that as well, but you have a lot of people, a lot of grants that we apply for where we're looking for that demographic. We're like, okay, great, we have this downtown. We could put that in there and include that in the grant. But there's often where a lot of those grants don't get, attributed to downtown.
Okay. That's not a good thing.
It's a bad thing.
It's a very bad thing.
And people need to be cognizant of that.
Yeah. So how did the chamber get involved in the, what was it, $250,000,
yep,
or something like that?
So the Empire Zone was going to be dissolved. When Governor Cuomo came in, he decided he was going to dissolve the Empire Zone. So the other towns, Clarvick, Greenport, and their members, because the Empire Zone board was made up of members. You had me, Brother Cross, Supervisor Cross, Rick Scalair, and Abdus Mia, along with, probably 11 other members from 11 other, from the other towns. When the governor decided he was going to dissolve the board, all the monies we had in reserve were to be split up, or go to the county. Well, the other members was like, oh, well, we're going to vote and we're going to take all this money to the county. And we're like, man, you must be out your mind. Listen, that first of all, the only reason why we even have an Empire Zone is because of the second and fourth wars. There ain't no way. If we don't split this money 50%, nobody's getting no money. And so we went in there and we went berserk. And most of the credit has to go out to at that time, Mayor Scalera, because he knew some of the other members and he lobbied them pretty hard to get them to vote with us. But when the vote came out, we split the money 50-50. Mm-hmm. And that money, we used most of that money to go down. Actually, at the time, it was the Washington Holes. And wasn't just to be the chamber, what it was supposed to be. And this is why you get to use the room as a rec room. It was supposed to be the Chamber of Commerce, ACDPA and HDC, and the room that's on the side was actually supposed to be a community computer room. We applied for a second grant, which we didn't get, so we weren't able to finish that part of it.
Right now, I'm almost 100% sure that they're charging. I remember before when we had our organization, we could use that place for free. But now I'm almost sure that they're charging to use those facilities. So
who would be charging?
Well, the chamber.
Well, the chamber doesn't own that building. They're leasing it. The city owns the building.
Then it would be the city then. Somebody's charging.
I'm not aware of that.
Yeah.
That's the case.
Yeah, I mean that might be something to look into. My thing is, so, and I understand you guys went through a lot, to be able to get that money, but how does the chamber and maybe a small computer room help the second and the fourth ward?
Well, when the monies were allocated, there was a specific, we had to, use it for a specific use. So chamber wasn't actually in the building. They weren't a tenant. Our intention was to fix the building up. We were going to move ACDPA in there. The space where the chamber is was just a space for rent. They weren't part of the plan. And the side room was supposed to be the community room. The chamber, I was off the council and long gone by then. The chamber then approached the city, and a contract was struck and all, but I wasn't part of that.
So, I mean, but in your words, out of the $500,000, because you split it 50-50,
yep,
out of the $500,000 that you really basically got off the second and the fourth war,
yep,
$250,000 we got, and right now it's maintainedly used by the chamber. And I heard, and when I say stuff like I heard or rumor, don't quote me on it. And I need your help as the politician, the steady politician, to help me out.
Yep.
That there was supposed to be some kind of job development down there for the members of the second and the fourth war?
That was later. So what came along is Peter Marcoux had created a program that was going to be a job creation, and it was dealing with push carts and also food trucks.
Yep, yep. That's a good idea.
Yep. And, you know, he was starting up an incubator at the time, where he was gonna move that along. And then he got sick, and we brought a new director in, and then you had Dick Tracy came in, and you had mm-hmm. Mr. Cedar came in, and he just wasn't capable to move forward with that. So it got lost at the wayside. Really.
Oh, okay. And this, I don't know if you know, but are they still using the same kind of theory, whereas let's put the second and the fourth board in these applications for these grants, and, you know, when things, because I mean, because if you think about it, I mean, the second and the fourth ward, the fourth ward, I don't know the whole ward, and right. that's your ward, yep. but the second ward, there's a lot of problems down there that yep. $250,000 probably could have fixed up a little bit. What ward is the youth center in?
The second ward, right? That would be the first ward.
Oh, first ward?
Yeah.
Okay. But there's a lot of problems down there that could. So yep. are they yep. still using the theory of, okay, let's get this on here? And, you know,
so you always are going to use the second ward, because when you're writing a grant, especially if you're writing a grant that's, you know, seeking funds to do development or improvements, mm-hmm. you want to point out your worst areas. So the second ward is always the worst area.
But my thing is, Bill, and I don't mean to interrupt you, if we have five grants, then they could, and that ward isn't improving, then it makes it seems like it's almost like a business. We keep this ward down so we can continue to get money off of this ward.
Well, I don't know if that's the philosophy. And look, Vern, this is why when I was coming through with a housing plan, my housing plan was to eventually do scatter site housing so that you weren't going to have, you know, the dilapidated housing and poor incomes in the second ward that you have right now. Mm-hmm. I wanted people, you know, whether you had low income, no income, or good income, to have the same kind of quality housing spread throughout the second ward, the fourth ward, and throughout the city. And that way, you know, you still could go back and say, okay, we have this amount of people in the city with a medium income of X, but you wouldn't be able to point specifically to the second ward.
Yeah, that I understand. That's all I'm saying is that, like, I heard about the whole second and fourth ward thing in the mm-hmm. applications, mm-hmm. but I've never heard anybody tell me that had been on, like, that new, you know, like I said, it could be a rumor, you know, people start talking in it and stuff like that. And,
it's not a rumor. It's how business used to be done. I'm not sure that they, you know, but you're never going to get away from that just because it is where the concentrated poverty is.
So, but who decides where the money is allocated at? I mean, I know.
Well, specific grants, like when you look at the DRI, for example.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Okay. The DRI is very specific in how that money is to be used. So when people got all upset about it, and you notice I kept saying, look, calm down, because I was already working on a parallel plan. Mm-hmm. Most people didn't know that, and I couldn't really articulate it, because again, when you get into contracts and RFPs,
you know
I can't put too much out there, but you will see probably in the next week or two there's going to be an article coming out talking about how we have, you know, a parallel housing plan that is coming along. Working with Sheena and the mayor have been great. I mean, Sheena is really taking the bull by the horn on this one. And then the county resources that we're putting into it. And it's not going to be everything that everybody is looking for, but it is going to be
something.
Something.
So is it the DRI or DII?
DRI.
DRI.
Downtown Revitalization.
Yeah. Okay. With that, there was a lot of argument about there being meetings for people to be able to voice their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I heard that there were meetings. And this is me asking you as you, not saying, you know, as a supervisor, but wouldn't you think that there should be a meeting whenever the second and the fourth ward is going to be put on a grant to receive money on their backs, per se, to say, hey, we have some money to allocate it. Like, what do you think we should do with it?
Look, bro, here's the thing that I always say. Not only should there not be a meeting, but how can you have, and I've always said this, how can you have, you know, when you're looking to talk about development, that's going to dramatically shape this, it's going to change the Second Ward, because whether development happens there or the amount of traffic, foot traffic that's going to come through there, it's going to change the Second Ward. Mm-hmm. So how could you not have someone there who is articulate, intelligent, who could represent the people in the Second Ward so that their views and opinions be heard? And I just never understood that. But look, I'm not in that room. I don't get to sit in those make those decisions. I would never do it.
Yeah, I thank you for that. I got one more question for you, and then we got about 15 minutes left. So okay. I got one more question, and I'm gonna let you, like I promise, I'm gonna let you go. Let you go crazy, man. Not crazy, but I'm gonna let you.
I'm not gonna go crazy.
No. When I say crazy, I'm just gonna let you talk. I'm not gonna interrupt unless you wanna, you know, have a dialogue with me. Give me 1 second. I'm pulling this up right now. I think I want to talk about, because there's one other thing that I seen that you had did, and I was wondering about that, and it's employment and race relation in government.
Yep.
Can you please talk about that?
Yeah. So I actually, when we had the police shootings, I actually, you know, gave the first speech that by a minority that was ever given on the floor of the Board of Supervisors. And I think some of my fellow supervisors was taken aback by a little bit. But with that, I also wanted to make clear that I didn't see the lack of hiring in the county and also municipality government within government altogether as racist, right? Mm-hmm. I see it, there's a whole lot of nepotism going on.
Yeah.
And the nepotism, you know, makes it look like it's racist because, you know, they're only hiring people that look like them. But then I also wanted to let them know that they don't put enough, you know, we the county don't put enough resources into the minority communities so that they too can take advantage of, you know, the opportunities. You know how it is. My father was a cop, so I could be a cop.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. That's not happening in the black community, because whose father you know was a cop?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Rashad.
Right, I'm saying? Yeah, it's just not going to happen. Or same thing. My father worked for the highway. I mean, you have lineage up at our county highway. You have people who are foremen where their grandfathers and their fathers and their father's father was a foreman, and they're now foremen. Yeah. That's not going to happen in the black community, because we just don't have those kinds of connections. And so I've been going to the chairman and going to my fellow supervisors and say, look, you need to give us an opportunity here. And I'm not going to be greedy. I'm not going to come in and say, look, you need to give me a foreman's job. But I need to be able to get my people on the ground floor so they know what it is like to work within government. And if you look now, we have 3 or 4 janitors now. Mm-hmm. I have 2 young black ladies working the door at 401. We have a couple other, you know, black people that are working in some other divisions. And I actually had 2 people that were supposed to start at as part-time correctional officers. One was Tyrone Hesper's son, and he decided to take the job at Brookwood instead.
Was Zach?
So, yeah.
Kudos
to him. But I had him in. And I had 1 other young black lady in, and she's still struggling with the paperwork. So, but, you know, we're making incremental steps, but I constantly in their ear telling them, look, we doing it, but we need to do a little more, you know?
So in a situation like that, so you're saying it's not about someone being qualified. It's just about, and I believe, I got to tell you, Bill, man, nepotism used to always bug me. It bugged me to the heart of it. I never grew up with my father. So I mean, my uncles were my uncles. But then as I started to climb the ladder, I started to realize why nepotism works so well, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not a fan of it, but I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is, how do we have the opportunity for people of color to be able to at least get on the bottom floor? Because someone has to get in to move up. And as you said, you've got people in there. Is this like, because all the jobs are being, because it's about what, 1,300 positions on the county level, right?
Yeah, about 11.
1,100?
Mm-hmm.
1,100, and I think you mentioned maybe eight people?
So all together in the county, I hate to throw a number out there, but we must be in the 20s.
20?
Yeah.
But out of 1,100. I mean, look, kudos
I'm not
to,
bragging about
no,
it.
No.
Trust me.
Kudos to you, but out of 1,100.
But when I was there, there was one, me.
But you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So there's a problem somewhere else there. And kudos to you. Let me give you a clap for that, because I'm looking at it. If you were there, there was one. And then, you know, in the time that you're there, 20, but out of 1,100 positions, mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty I don't want to turn it into that. But I want to ask you one more thing, and then I'm going to let you go. And, mm-hmm. and I want to ask you about how do you feel about the disconnect? And I'm going to use a saying from my buddy, my bro, Kamal, the disconnect between the community, the school, and the police. And as my buddy would say, this is supposed to be the community, school, and the citizens should make up the police, the school, and the citizens should make up the community. Mm-hmm. But it seems mm-hmm. like there's a disconnect there. How do you feel about that? And do you have any thoughts of how we can better that?
So the police, the school, and who else?
And the everyday citizen.
Everyday citizen. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, our police officers, first and foremost, one of the things I always had a problem with is that we were hiring cops that weren't part of the community. And we will allow people to live outside the community. And what that did is, you know how it is, Vern. We grew up, we knew people in the community who meant no harm. You know, they probably drank their 40 and fell around on the sidewalk or whatever. But, you know, they meant no harm to us. Mm-hmm. But if you're a cop who didn't know them personally or didn't know their family, that person was a threat to you. And correct. So now you have a problem. Same thing with the schools. So when our police officers started entering the school system, they would come in and everybody was a threat. We had to assume everybody's a threat. When I grew up, you know, I wasn't a great kid. You know, I did my dirt. But, you know, how many times did the police officer, you know, kiss her back or Officer Hollenbeck put me in the back of their car and drive me home and let my parents do the discipline?
Yeah, Karana was like that. Karana was really good.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's not what we get now. It's like we put the kid in the car, we handcuffed them, put them in the car, and we drive them up to probation or the police department. They become a part of the PEN system. And correct. We know what happens after that.
Yes, we
know.
You
know, once we're in the system, then they're forever in the system. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not sure I know the solution other than the fact that I know there has to be much more interaction with the police department, our schools, and our community. But the biggest thing I think that has to happen is our schools, our teachers need to reflect the population in which they teach, and our police department needs to reflect the population in which they serve.
I got to agree. I got to give you a clap on that, man. You know what? That I agree 100%. I do. Now I'm going to stop you because I'm going to let you go. I promise you.
All right.
It is 5:06 right now. We have until 5:15
okay.
before I take my next break. So I want you to just tell the listeners. And I'm going to thank you again, but thank you for coming.
Yep.
Thank you for having this dialogue with us. And just let the voters know and the people know your accomplishments and mm-hmm. why they should get out there in November and pull your name.
Cool. So first of all, I think a lot of people don't know me. And I got in this in campaigning, people will say I walk by them or I don't talk to them or whatever it is. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I grew up as a kid and I had a lot of opportunities, at least that were afforded to me. I just couldn't take advantage of those opportunities because of my eye condition. And I truthfully, funny enough, did not even realize that I had an eye condition until I was in 16th grade in my senior year, when I was kicked off the football team, because my doctor said I couldn't play. And then about 3 months later, I was then told that I could never drive. Mm-hmm. My dream was always to go into the military school. So I had already took all the pre-tests. I had already went through all the pre-courses. Unfortunately, I couldn't get the physical the same day, so I had to wait 3 or 4 months. So I was hyped up about going into the Marine Corps and becoming an officer. Whereas the doctor come in and says, that's never going to happen, nor are you ever going to be in the armed services because your eye condition, you just don't see well enough. Okay. So now I'm wondering, like, you know, what is this with my eye condition? Because up until that time, I thought I was pretty normal. I didn't know my eye condition was worse than yours, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I knew I didn't see quite as good as you, but I could see pretty good straight ahead.
I got you.
Yeah, you know, so that kind of dictated what I was going to it put me in a downspin. So I didn't know what I was going to do with my career. So I ended up not going to college initially, and I went and worked at Burger King for $3.25 an hour.
I remember when you worked there,
yep,
too.
13 years. I used to work at Burger King from 9 at night to 5 in the morning, and I used to walk to Walmart and work from 5:30 in the morning at Walmart to 2:30 in the afternoon. Wow. And then walk home. And I did that for about 6 years. And then I eventually got a job at ADM, so I worked in the mornings at ADM and nights at Burger King. And Mr. Grandinetti saw me one day and said, hey, I can help you get a county job. And he helped me get a county job, but it was part-time. So I kept the two full-time jobs. So I worked at ADM in the mornings, Burger King at night, and the county on the weekends, and I DJed at night on the weekends. You know, so I did that for about 4 years until I eventually got on full-time at the county. And when I got on full-time at the county, I still kept Burger King job because I loved the culture. It was not what I was getting paid, but the culture and the people there. So I still stayed at Burger King for about another 2 or 3 years after I worked at the county. But once I got a couple of promotions, I eventually quit. But that just goes to speak to when people say, you know, I have a lot of things and I have a lot of things given to me. I worked my butt off. And most people don't know that. And I was never able to drive. So I walked 4 and 5 miles one direction for each job.
Mm-hmm.
And I carried that passion over until, some of the things that I fought for. Vern, I watched, a lot of people do a lot of good work in the community. Mrs. Staley Keith, mm-hmm. Brother Cross had done a lot of work in the community. I think they just struggle with how to put programs together. I watched Rick, I watched them, I watched Quentin, I watched a lot of people, and it just clicked. I got it. So the Promised Neighborhood was a program that, Trudy Beck actually brought it to our attention. It wasn't me that brought it to our attention. She had got this STAR grant, and it took a group of us, Daryl Blanks, myself, Maria, Paul Mossman, my sister, Wanda Patilla, and a couple other people. We all went down. We stayed in New York City for 3 days. We came back and we were hyped. We're going to start our own, our Harlem Children's Zone here in Hudson. And so we delved into it and we jumped into it and we didn't realize what we were doing. It was really complicated. So we failed. And then Catholic Charities came in and we decided that we were going to, give it a second chance. And I, again, was back on the board, and it was the same group of people that I named, except for Daryl wasn't there. We had Trudy there instead, and a couple other people, and we brought Candace LaRue and Associates. We brought them in, and my charge was to go around to get MOUs. MOU was a Memorandum of Understanding of all the organizations, because it had to be, when the Promised Neighborhood was put together, it had to be a collaboration of all your nonprofit organizations and businesses throughout the community that supported it. So that was my charge, and that's what I did. I went throughout the community, and I got pretty much everybody to sign up, except for, surprisingly, you'd be surprised to hear this, TSL. I approached Linda. We were looking for a lead agency. I approached Linda, and she all but threw me out the office and didn't want any part of it. And I was taken aback, but I went back to the group, and I told them that she didn't want a part of it. But we had Operation Unite, and we had Columbia Opportunities, Catholic Charities, and all the other groups that were a part of it. And so then we were moving along, and we hired a couple of directors. We hadn't yet hired Joni Hunt. We hired a couple of directors, and they failed, and we were really struggling. And Joni came in, and she was bright-eyed and young.
Yeah.
She was just so young, and we were apprehensive, but I was like, look, let's give her a chance, and look what we have. We have a really shining star in Joni.
Yeah.
So moving on in the program, has gotten to grow and to be pretty successful. But if you look in the last year and a half, they have had their struggles where they ran into where the Galvin Foundation initially, we're going to put them out of the location where they were. Mm-hmm. And for the people out there who are saying that, I'm bought by Galvin, I've worked for Galvin and all that. Well, talk to Joni about that, because when she called me on that situation, I put my friendship with Rick Scalera and my friendship for whatever the friendship I have with Galvin on the line. And I went to war, and I put every resource I had. And I took it personal. This wasn't politics. This was personal to me, because we had I felt as though we had a program that was doing everything in the community that I dreamed of, that it was going to help our kids, help our families. They were going to have opportunities, and it was going to show them, it was going to give them a way out where they didn't see a way out before. And then now we're going to have someone come in and just wipe that out in one fell swoop. And I wasn't going to let it happen. So I went to war with Galvin. I went to war with anybody who was going to stand in my way. And it wasn't pretty. I'll say that. I risked everything. And at the end of the day, though, their lease was extended. And then they had an angel that came in and gave them additional rent. And then the rent was lower and their lease was extended again. And I then called a meeting with Galvin and says, look, they wanted to know why I was fighting so hard for it. And I explained to them and they said, well, we have to meet these people. If what you're saying is about this program, we need to meet them. So I set up a meeting, came in, and they ended up giving them $250,000 to sustain them for the next 5 years.
That's what's up.
But, you know, I risked everything. I put my whole heart into it because I didn't care. It wasn't about the politics. I was like, whether I survive or not, it wasn't about that. It was about the people in the community. The same thing, Joni and Roxanne came to me about AmeriCorps. And they said, hey, we want to start an AmeriCorps program in the city of Hudson, but we don't have the money to write the grant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, all right. So, you know, I went to the city and they said, look, we don't, this is not what we do. And I said, but think about this. This is going to create jobs, hundreds of jobs for the kids in the city. It's going to provide them opportunities, college, you know, they're going to get college credits. We can't ask for any better than that. Mm-hmm. And I convinced them to give us $10,000. We wrote the grant and we now have an AmeriCorps program.
I got to stop you, Bill, because I can give you one last minute, I can have you back again.
Yeah. It's just that, you know, I know people are out here making a choice, and they're, you know, they want to paint me as something that I know I'm not. My heart is with all the people. You know, I support everybody in the city of Hudson. My heart is really with the second and fourth ward because that's where I was raised, lived there my whole entire life, and so I don't know anything different. And if the people decide that they want to change from what I'm doing already, you know, I have to, you know, respect that. But to be honest, I don't know how you could, you know, if Linda's offering a change from what? Because I'm really doing for the second war and the fourth war what they really need.
Okay, man. Like I said, thank you for coming in. And again, Bill, you can come back anytime.